You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Prodigy is a production of iHeartRadio. When I tell people what I do for work, they say, "That's really cool. How'd you get into it?" And I tell them the truth. I got lucky. I really needed a different job and knew somebody when they were hiring. I didn't know much about audio when I first got started. I came from a video background, but I didn't know like what a compressor was or EQ or how to talk into a mic. My first month around the office was a little overwhelming, but I started to get to know some people. Tyler Klang was my executive producer and just a top-notch human being. The guys from Stuff They Don't Want You to Know were like celebrities to me. I was thrilled when they went out of their way to talk to me. I fangirled over Josh Clark and Chuck Bryant, and even got to meet John Hodgman. Super nice dude, by the way. There was one guy who was pretty quiet, but really nice. I think I never saw him once without a hat, and I was personally offended to see him editing with his laptop's touchpad instead of a mouse. His name is Ben Kiebrick. Ben had more experience than me, but not that much. I mean, Tyler has like 10 years experience and has produced tons of top 10 shows. Josh and Chuck have hosted somewhere around 2,000 episodes of Stuff You Should Know and done literally over a billion downloads. When I first got to know Ben, he was on the True Crime slate and working on the hit show Monster, DC Sniper. It wasn't until much later that I found out he actually pitched that show. Ben seems to have a knack for this stuff. Months ago, he told me about a story he was working on, and when I heard the premise, I knew it would be a hit. It's already done over a million downloads and charted in the top 10. The show is called Algorithm. Here's the official description. When Africa Hardy was strangled in 2014, it seemed completely random. But it wasn't. It was part of a pattern. 4 years earlier, reporter Thomas Hargrove had created an algorithm to detect serial killers and flagged Gary, Indiana as the site of an unusual number of strangulations. But when Hargrove reached out to Warren local police, he was ignored. Until Africa Hardy was murdered. And those cold cases suddenly didn't look so cold. Algorithm follows the investigation into Africa's murder, exposing the warnings that police ignored and uncovering more than anyone expected. That a serial killer was strangling women in Gary, Indiana could have been stopped. And that Africa Hardy should be alive today. This podcast will explore how technology can be used to identify and track serial killers, and how an algorithm can influence the way homicides are investigated all across the country. My name is Lowell Berlanti, and this is Prodigy. Since we're both vaccinated, I brought Ben into my home studio to talk about his new hit show, Algorithm. The next episode you'll see in my feed is the first episode, so you have an easy way to listen. The seventh episode drops today, so if you like the first one, head over to the Algorithm show page linked in the description and check out the rest.
A friend sent this article about this journalist, Thomas Hargrove, who had created this algorithm to try to detect serial killers from FBI data. So most FBI data they just give it at kind of the county level or the police jurisdiction level. And it's like, there were this number of robberies, this are the percentage of them that we solved, and it's kind of this big aggregate data. But they created this thing called the Supplemental Homicide Report for researchers who wanted to study homicide. And again, they just thought it was for kind of statistical analysis. But this journalist, Thomas Hargrove, he's an interesting dude. He's the son of a programmable calculator salesman. So I think he was introduced to the idea of programming at a much earlier time period and younger age than most people. He went to University of Missouri, which is one of the top journalism programs in the country. He went there as an undergrad, and there was this new movement starting called computer-assisted reporting. This is back when they're doing like punch card programming kind of stuff. But the idea was you could use computers to really crunch numbers and do these kind of statistical analyses on like government records and things like that to try to detect trends and notice interesting patterns that you just might not miss if you're kind of just anecdotally looking at individual cases. So from that, he went on to be just like a crime reporter. That was kind of like his cutting his teeth job in journalism. And then his computer skills kind of got in handy with doing political polls. And he was actually kind of one of the early people to do the kind of like election night analysis kind of stuff. From there, he got a job as a national reporter, and he would just do these kind of like big data-driven stories. And for one of them, he had to request this FBI data, and they ended up just sending him that supplemental homicide report. And he's like, oh, like individualized data on crimes. Like, I didn't know this existed. Like, I didn't know this data set existed. And he says that one of the first thoughts he had was, I wonder if we can look at this data and use that to somehow detect serial killers, to look for patterns within this data.
That was before the term serial killer existed, I remember from listening. So like what year, do you know approximately what year that was?
I've left out a beat of the story, which is that was, so in the 70s, around the time of the Atlanta child murders, that was back when he was the crime reporter in Alabama. At that time, maybe they were calling them like lust killers or something like that. Serial killer at least wasn't widespread. This time as a crime reporter, he learned about this thing called linkage blindness, which is this idea that oftentimes cases get assigned, even if cases are connected, right? So the same person kills two people in an identical way. Even if it's completely identical, the cases might just get assigned to different detectives, or often will get assigned to different detectives because it's a lot of work to investigate a homicide.
This is why people have been comparing your show to Mindhunter.
Because, yeah, I guess that's like the same thing, but kind of from the behavioral analysis versus...
Oh,
the,
yeah, huge compliment. Well, that's a great show.
Yeah. Appreciate it. So anyway, he learned from that about this idea of linkage blindness, that it's very hard for individual detectives to connect these cases. And so when he saw this individualized data that the FBI had collected, he wondered, could an algorithm solve that problem?
In the trailer, let's play that now.
Don't think that you know everything about your child, because there's something that they're not telling you. If I knew that this was going on, I would have went out there and brought my child back home.
When Africa Hardy was murdered in 2014, it seemed completely random, but it wasn't. It was part of a pattern.
Today, Indiana police say that seven women found murdered over the last few days may be victims of a serial killer.
They weren't even looking, and seven women died. I at least knew that there was a serial killer active in Gary. I was assigned to do a really interesting story, and I needed the Uniform Crime Report. Included on that CD was a file I had never heard of. What it was line after line of individual murders. The first thought I had was, could we teach a computer to identify connected cases, to find serial killings?
From iHeartRadio and Tenderfoot TV, this is Algorithm, a podcast investigating a modern serial killer and how he could have been stopped.
The bodies, some of them found concealed in abandoned homes, had been there for months.
this story has the potential to change how homicides are investigated all across the country.
Because of her line of work, they didn't have time for her.
They still believe that he has a trail of bodies from Texas all the way to Gary, Indiana.
I don't think we still know how many women he's actually killed.
I think the Gary Police Department should be looking at some of those old cases. They still may have a killer out there.
This is Algorithm, a new podcast from iHeartRadio and Tenderfoot TV. Listen and subscribe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Why have the, like, many crimes not been solved? I would assume that it's harder to get away with crime now than it was, you know, I don't know, 50 years ago.
But there's a couple of theories. So one is maybe, so this is clearance rates for one. So it doesn't mean people have actually been convicted of the crime. It could be that they were just arrested, but then weren't actually convicted. So there's different ways of measuring clearance, but I think that stat is clearance to arrest. And so it's possible that, you know, in the 60s or something, these kind of good old boy policemen were just arresting some black guy who didn't actually commit the crime and either, you know, ending up incarcerating him for a crime he didn't do or letting him go later or something like that. That's probably part of what's going on. Another idea is that we've gotten better at kind of detecting domestic violence early on and kind of intervening. So we take stuff more seriously when it's just like physical abuse. So as a result of that, we think that now there's less kind of spousal or domestic homicides. So domestic homicides are very easy to solve.
So for preventing them,
one main suspect. Yeah, exactly.
The ones that do happen are harder to solve.
Yeah, we're getting rid of the cases that are easiest to solve, and we're left with more of the kind of stranger murders that are hard to solve. You know, there's ideas too that then there's an increase in gang homicides. Those are particularly hard to solve. And then, you know, I think some people think that there's something going on too with people being less willing to talk to the police, and that when people aren't cooperating with the police, that makes things hard to solve. So I think there's this kind of cyclical problem that then when police have the attitude that they think people aren't going to talk to them, then they don't do the basic detective work to ask people to talk to them. And then when they're not doing the detective work, then people trust the police less. So there's a researcher I talked to who is kind of, this is the people not talking to the police. It's laid out in this book called Ghetto Side. I think it's a badly named book, but a good book by this LA reporter who covered crime for a long time. And she kind of embedded with the LAPD, which is another kind of controversial police department for sure. And I talked to a researcher who kind of reading that book spurred her to do research into this. And if I remember her research correctly, it's kind of this interesting study. So they look at lawsuits of basically black police officers alleging that their police departments discriminated against them in hiring. And so there were these federal lawsuits for that, but they really caused these reckonings for these police departments regarding kind of all racial issues. And they show that kind of once that stuff happens, then you see stuff like now police start responding to 911 calls from their like black constituents more quickly. And then you see that like the attitude, the trust between the police and the community gets a lot better. So anyway, the police blames the community blames the police. But when these things kind of force police to start acting better, the community notices and become more cooperative.
That's great. And so explain exactly what an algorithm is.
An algorithm is just a set of rules to do something, right? So it's you're trying to create a systematized thing to solve some problem. I use the metaphor in the show that like a recipe is essentially an algorithm. So it's like you want a pancake. If you follow these steps correctly, you will get a pancake, you know, pretty much 100% of the time.
And then AI is essentially an algorithm, but it just has like a lot more variables.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so a lot of what we think about now as algorithms are actually kind of like two embedded algorithms. So when we talk about the things like the Google algorithm or the Instagram algorithm or something like that, you know, we're trying to make an algorithm not just to display something to you, but that kind of like feeds back on itself. And, you know, it's, the algorithm is trying to maximize you doing a thing. AI or kind of like machine learning is another term for these kind of algorithms that change themselves depending on the feedback that they're getting.
All right, let's take a quick break to analyze the data. Be right back.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right, come here.
Check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Welcome back to Prodigy.
Do you think that like algorithm has the potential to change crime solving? Because it seems like it's like the first step towards a Minority Report.
You know, just solving cold cases is incredibly hard. And so the algorithm can identify cold cases that might be connected, but in terms of kind of what you do with that information, I think it's a little harder, right? So maybe you want to warn people in the victim profile, like, hey, there might be a serial killer out here.
I was thinking there'd be like new evidence, you know, that you could add to the case. And
Yeah, potentially. But then I think maybe another thing it could do now is spur, like, these cases might be connected. Do we have DNA on them that has been sitting there? Let's analyze all this DNA, see if the DNA can prove the connection. And if that's the case, you know, maybe spend all the time and resources to do the kind of forensic genealogy analysis, which is really time consuming and expensive, but in the case of a serial killer, you know, like if they're still out there.
Yeah. Like, you think you'll ever solve who the Zodiac was?
Well, I mean, the big question was, is there kind of DNA sitting somewhere? I think they tried to run the DNA analysis on the stamps and it seems to have come up negative. That was all kind of rumor mill stuff because it's an open case. So you can't get access to those documents.
Well, smart serial killers like Kaczynski, don't they like plant red herrings, like fake stuff?
I think there was like, you know, some of the Zodiac conspiracy theories are like,
oh yeah,
that he got was someone else or no, well, that too, but that, like, you know, like he just took it, you know, it's like you hear these stories like you got someone else to lick the stamps or something. And it's like, well, I don't think anyone really knew, like maybe DNA existed at that point. Like,
oh,
we knew
point.
About the double helix, but I don't think anyone was talking about
applying
it to forensics at that point or anything.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, what's going on with it now? Like, I mean, have they started integrating this stuff? Because I know this case, I mean, Hargrove's still alive. I mean, it's still.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's kind of one of the things that spurred me. Like, when I heard this story, it's like, why isn't this a bigger deal?
Yeah. Did you first search to see that no one had done a podcast on it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was one of those things where you're like, surely someone has done this. And I'm still not exactly sure. You know, I think it is, he's a little bit of a weird dude. It's a little bit of an out there idea.
Doesn't seem like it now, right? With big data and stuff. Like,
yeah, so it's less of an out there idea than it was, You know, I think the police department, I think they see it maybe as like, you know, like, who is this guy? Like, what does he know about solving crime? And again, it's not a magic bullet. It's not an alternative.
It's just another tool.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. And I think maybe some of the press reports that it's gotten, you know, have kind of like sensationalized it. And then like people just don't.
We won't
really
need police after this. We'll just send drones to arrest people with algorithms. Like, no, it's just like a tool to help them connect things when there's a crap ton of data, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, and I think it's there's probably a culture thing where, you know, Hargrove is writing these letters to police departments talking about multivariate analysis and whatever, whatever. And he just sounds like some crank and, you know.
Also, that, people don't like to know, like get new information. They're like, oh, I'm an expert on this. So I don't want some random person telling me.
But I mean, like, we had the same thing with like electronic medical records and like convincing doctors to do that and like trying to get, you know, there's this drive to get Watson AI to kind of help data mine stuff from people's patient records to try to make connections in medicine. And
I was thinking it was like, so I can't fill my prescription three times at different pharmacies.
Well, they had to do that in Florida too.
Right. Oh, yeah, because the pain medicine.
But you know, I think like even a field like medicine where people are very like educated and stuff like that, it's just everyone's kind of set in their ways and they have their systems and they know all of the potential problems for something like this. And, you know, I think one of the issues for we don't collect very good data in policing too. And it's just like a lot of detectives, especially homicide detectives, other parts of policing might be overfunded. I think there's a lot of predatory policing stuff with like gangs and drugs and stuff like that. Those are money makers for police departments often, because if you bust a drug dealer, you can seize the money that they have on them and actually bring it into your police department, which we need to get rid of that.
Yeah, that's it, seems like an incentive to
it's horrible incentives for police. Well, and it's also incentives to expand those departments, but not expand your homicide department or your sexual assault department. Potentially, we could do all this great stuff if we collected better data, put it into databases, you know, just so detectives have that themselves to look at. But it's just, you know, you're asking someone to fill out another form and they're not going to see the benefit of doing it maybe until 6 months down the line when the connected crime happens. So,
we need to monetize it then, basically.
Yeah, exactly. We need to fund it specifically or figure out a way that kind of that data automatically gets generated while they do the thing they're already doing. I don't think it's going to take off.
APIs?
If you, make them spend an extra half an hour filling out a form or something.
I mean, like,
it's one of those problems.
I mean, with Airtable. With us, I definitely understand.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, what was like, what's one of the cool things that you learned about it? Like something that you would, you know, hook somebody in that's interested in listening?
I mean, so one of the things I hadn't thought that much about is, you know, I first came across this story reading, you know, the Wikipedia page, these articles about it. You know, I went and read every newspaper article. A lot of those articles, it's based on whatever few public documents there are out there. So in this case, it was the warrant for the arrest of this guy who is the kind of primary suspect in Africa's murder. And, you know, that's something the police are just trying to throw together as quickly as possible. So, you know, it's like so there are parts of it that are ambiguously written that then the reporters reading it misinterpreted and then they wrote it up and it kind of turns into this like game of telephone. And I'm not blaming the reporters, I mean, or the police. It's like everyone is just doing their best to turn around this stuff, but then that kind of got ingrained in the lore and you see it repeated a bunch of times. And then in this case, it was this highly publicized case right when it happened, so the judge put a gag order on the case where people weren't allowed to talk about it or leak documents or anything. And actually, I think that gag order is still in place, which is kind of highly unusual. They did end up releasing to me certain documents despite that gag order, but I know I'm the first person to get my hands on these documents because it was a big back and forth about whether they could release anything and what they could release. And some city lawyer had to go through every document and redact stuff. And,
oh, cool. So that's in, later on in the show?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Awesome. Excited.
Yeah, getting there pretty soon. So
yeah, it's been great.
I think the story zigs and zags in some unusual ways.
Yeah, no, I was really impressed by how you handled, you know, speaking to the, you know, survivors. Like, that's a tough thing to do, I'm sure. But I wanted to ask, like, what was it like going from like behind the mic to in front of the mic?
Yeah, I mean, so I've been in front of the mic before. So when I was a reporter at this radio station in Kansas, High Plains Public Radio in Garden City, Kansas, I'd talked into a mic, but there I feel like I was just kind of this, like, you know, I guess named but like faceless reporter who is just giving you facts and stuff like that. And
yeah, because this is a big show.
Yeah, and two, ended up kind of including some of the actual interviews with these people, like you mentioned, victims, family members, surviving family members. So kind of one of the early interviews in when I was still figuring out if I was going to do this show is with this murder victim, Africa Hardy, her mother. Anyway, so it feels vulnerable to just put the moments where you're just talking to them versus this narrated stuff that you've written and agonized over. And
it's weird because people always seem to respond better to that organic stuff, like, you know, like, and you're like, I spent all this time making this perfect, and they're
exactly.
I don't like that.
and I think the battle with writing is trying to make it sound organic while still conveying all the things you need it to say.
Oh god, yeah, especially there's big words. I'm like, if I say it too fast, no one will understand like all the words I'm saying. But yeah, no, I get that. It's tough, definitely tough.
Yeah, but so anyway, it has been a little bit humbling because it's like I've been interviewing all of these people, and you know, they're in even less control because they're not even editing it. They're just handing it off to me, and they trust me. And I think putting myself in a little bit of the limelight, I think I'm hoping it will make me more sensitive going forward when I'm reaching out to people and interviewing them. It's just a reminder of how nerve-wracking that is. So.
Done it a bit myself. That's not easy at all. You've done a friggin' amazing job. But yeah, I'm really excited to listen to the rest of the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for talking with me.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Thanks so much to Ben Kiebrick. The next episode of my feed will be the first episode of Algorithm. I love the show and I'm fully caught up. New episodes drop on Tuesday. Thanks for listening to Prodigy. I really appreciate the messages I get from you guys. I have a bunch of new episodes coming on subjects like UFO sightings, Navy SEALs, money, cults, and a bunch more. Prodigy was created and produced by me, Lowell Berlanti. The executive producer is Tyler Klang. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.